Hey, this is Ari. Welcome back to the Energy Blueprint Podcast. With me in this episode is Kevin Ellis, also known as the Bone Coach. And he has a really interesting story. After a diagnosis of osteoporosis in his early 30s, he went on to not only heal himself, but he's now dedicated his life to helping people fix their bone health, helping people overcome osteopenia and osteoporosis and strengthen their bones. I really enjoyed this episode. I found Kevin to be a very, very insightful guy with a lot of knowledge and he has a lot of novel insights to share. So I think you'll get a lot of value from this, whether you have osteoporosis or osteopenia, or you're just looking to learn about this topic and learn how to maintain optimal skeletal health as you get older. So enjoy the episode. So welcome to the show, Kevin. Such a pleasure to have you.
Ari, thanks so much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah. Okay. So first of all, I have to ask, how did a young, fit guy such as yourself get involved in helping women deal with their bone health? This seems like a fairly unusual thing for a man in your demographic.
I know, right? It's not typically your 30-year-old male at the time, you know, that's told to have osteoporosis and bone health issues. But that's really how my journey started. And actually, I'll even back up and start. My health journey started a long time ago. When my mother was 5 months pregnant with me, my father was told he had cancer. He was a Marine in Vietnam, he got cancer from Agent Orange of all things. He made it through 22 months in combat, but he got cancer from Agent Orange. He passed away when I was 2 months old.
Wow.
So, you know, my entire life, I kind of had this fear in the back of my mind that, you know, he passed away at 35. And I just had a feeling that, you know, my time was going to come somewhere around there. I couldn't help that. Uh-huh. And just before that happened, right around my late 20s or so, after I had gotten out of the Marine Corps and had, you know, was doing some other things, I started having all these other health issues that were coming to fruition. I had poor energy, could barely get out of bed every single day, you know, was not sleeping well. And I was then diagnosed with celiac disease. And then subsequently, I was told I had osteoporosis. And, you know, if it weren't for a physician's assistant, all the other physicians that I had gone to, they never did a bone density scan. They never even proposed that. Even once we found out I had celiac disease, but then a physician's assistant said, "Hey, have you had this done?" And I thought, okay, yeah, let's just go get it done. We went, we did the bone density scan. I thought it was going to come back and just be a check in the box. Like, okay, you know, your bones are fine. And they wrote me a letter in the mail and said, "You have osteoporosis, go on a gluten-free diet." And that was it. And wow. I was shocked at that point. And I actually didn't even believe it. So I went and I got a second opinion and they went and confirmed that in fact I had osteoporosis. So I was immediately like, what is osteoporosis? What do I need to do about this? I had young kids on the way and I was just worried that I wasn't going to be there for them. And I was going to follow in the same footsteps as my father did. Mm-hmm. So I had this, you know, this really strong desire to figure things out so I could be there for my kids. And that was really my reason for making improvements. And so I started doing all this reading and research and consulting with a lot of different people and spending a lot of money trying to figure all this stuff out. And I eventually got to the point where I was making progress and I was making improvements. I was improving my health, my energy, you know, improving my bones, and finally getting to a point where, you know, I realized it's not the average 30-year-old male that's trying to figure all this stuff out. It's usually the woman, 45, 50, 60 plus, that's diagnosed with osteopenia, osteoporosis. And at that time they're diagnosed, they're told, hey, take some calcium, take some vitamin D, go for a walk, and take a bone drug. And that's woefully inadequate. And that's really the reason why I got into this field and I created bonecoach.com and really have been helping people all over the world at this point.
Excellent. So first of all, what is this for people who don't actually know? Maybe they've heard the term osteoporosis or osteopenia, but they don't actually know physiologically what is actually happening in the body. What is this crazy sounding word? Osteo means bone. What's penia or porosis? What do these terms mean?
Yeah. So osteoporosis literally means porous bone, and it's a condition that's characterized by either not enough bone formation, excessive bone loss, or it's a combination of the two of those things. And what happens in osteoporosis is both your bone density and your bone quality are reduced, and that's going to increase your risk of fracture. And the way you find out you have osteoporosis is through what's called a DEXA scan. That's dual energy X-ray absorptiometry. It's a painless test, kind of like an X-ray, but very low levels of radiation. And you lay down on the machine. The machine does this scan, and it's going to tell you your bone mineral density, which is the actual mineral content of your bone. And then it generates the score. And that score is called a T-score. And the T-score is telling you how much your bone mass differs from the bone mass of an average healthy 30-year-old adult. So if you have a score of plus one or minus one or zero, that's what they're going to consider normal and healthy. If you have a score of negative one to negative 2.5, that's considered osteopenia, which is considered low bone mass, also a precursor to osteoporosis. And if you have negative 2.5 or lower, so negative 2.6, negative 2.7, so on and so forth, that's considered osteoporosis. And the greater that negative number becomes, the more severe the osteoporosis. Most women, most people are going to be getting these scans done later in life, their 50s, their 60s, their 70s, as a check in the box, or maybe it's a fracture or something like that that they have, and then they go get a DEXA scan. But in my opinion, that's too late, right? We want to get these things earlier on in life so we have some objective, you know, near-term indicators from which we can monitor future changes. So if you're listening to this, you know, and you're in your 30s or your 40s or even your 50s, or 60s, and you haven't had one yet, I would go get one just to get a baseline so you understand kind of where you're at this point and what changes are going to take place in the future.
Okay. I want you to scare people a little bit. What I mean by that is most people won't take action to go do something like that, to go like go to their doctor and say, hey, I want a bone scan, bone density scan.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to go maybe subject myself to the scary sounding X-ray radiation stuff in order to get this data.
And it's very low levels for that, but
What I mean is that most people won't take action unless there is some need to, or a scary enough thing, like let's say cancer. People will maybe go get some screenings for cancer because cancer is super scary. I don't want that. Tell me about why people should be scared of osteopenia, osteoporosis, and why they should really be concerned with it. What kinds of things result from this if you do have low bone mineral density?
Yeah, let's go through the stats of this, right? Approximately 10 million Americans have osteoporosis. Other 44 million have low bone density. One in two women and up to one in four men are going to break a bone in their lifetime due to osteoporosis. For women, the incidence is greater than that of heart attack, stroke, and breast cancer combined. That's huge, right? Huge. 6 months after a hip fracture, you got only 15% of patients can walk across a room unaided. Every year, we've got nearly 300,000 hip fracture patients, and one quarter of them end up in a nursing home, and half of them never regain previous function. Wow. Again, that's huge, right? These are alarming statistics. This is not something, and the challenging thing with osteoporosis is it's a silent condition and almost forgotten, even if people do realize it, because it's not really affecting your day-to-day life. You could still feel fine and have low bone density. And the way you're going to know that it's really an issue for you is once you have that fracture. And I can tell you, after working with thousands of people, and we work with people that have had anywhere from no fractures to 5 to 10 or more fractures, the people that have already had fractures, they will tell you it's much better to be on the side of prevention than reaction. And I would 100% reinforce that. So those are kind of the stats around it. And it's pretty alarming, right? And I will also say too, this is not something that is trending down. It's an increase.
Okay. So this hip fracture thing, you know, I've always heard story since I was young of people who are 80 years old, 75 years old, who fall and they break a hip and then they just never recover from it. Mm-hmm. And that scenario is pretty much always due, maybe that's too strong of wording, but most often due to osteopenia or osteoporosis, creating that susceptibility to fracturing that hip in such a severe way. Is that accurate to say?
Yeah. I would say that's usually going to be the cause, unless it's like, especially even if somebody is standing and they fall over, you shouldn't fracture your hip just from standing and falling over, right? Mm-hmm. But that's going to be an indicator of reduced bone density and reduced bone quality. An important thing here too is we were just talking about bone density and bone density scans. When you get those scans though, they're only going to tell you part of the picture, right? So bone density is part of the picture. The other part of the picture is bone quality, and bone density and bone quality combine to create bone strength. So a lot of times people go get these DEXA scans done and you may be told you have osteoporosis by bone density, but you don't have the other part of the picture. Bone quality is how that bone is organized, the structural integrity, the microarchitecture of that bone. And that's a really, really important part of the puzzle too. So there is a software called TBS, Trabecular Bone Score, that is an add-on to DEXA. Not all locations have it. Not all physicians will try to interpret this, but you can ask and you can request it and see if there's one in your area. And when you go get the DEXA scan and you get the TBS at the same time, you can leave with a more whole picture of what, you know, your actual bone strength is. There's also another tool called, it's more prevalent in Europe right now. It's kind of slower to adopt here in the US, but it's called Echolight, REMS Echolight, radio frequency echographic multispectrometry technology. And it's like an ultrasound technology.
Can you say that 10 times fast?
Radio frequency echographic.
I'm just kidding.
I know. I wasn't going to go down that path. Yeah. But so basically this REMS technology, it's an ultrasound and it's going to look at both your bone density, your bone quality, and it's going to calculate, you know, a 5-year fragility score, basically, which is going to tell you risk of osteoporotic fracture. So there are tools that can help. But even if you find out you have low bone density, it's important to actually start doing things to make progress there.
Okay. So with that in mind, let's talk about how we might address root causes. So let's go into what are the root causes for this. I'm curious. I mean, you're obviously a very atypical case having this in at 30 years old. So I'm curious what your root causes were and if they are the same or different from the more common root causes of that middle-aged and older women are especially susceptible to.
Yeah, no, that's great. Like, so for me, I'll just start with me as an example. Yes, I am an atypical situation. Most of the time, unless somebody has celiac disease or other GI conditions from a young age, which those can be contributors. You know, if somebody from a young age, 90% of your bone mass is put on by the time you turn age 18, and the remaining 10% is put on by the time you turn 30. So if you had, at a younger age, you smoked or drank excessively, you led a sedentary lifestyle, you took certain medications, you had an eating disorder, you didn't get proper diet and nutrition from a young age, all of those things can contribute to you not achieving and reaching peak bone mass. So that can be part of the picture too. But for me, I had some of those things. When I was in the Marine Corps, I partied a little bit hard. I smoked cigarettes for 5 years, not good decisions. Actually, if there's one thing I regret, it was smoking cigarettes. I would never do that again.
Yeah.
But then I also had digestive issues and I was staying up late and I wasn't getting proper sleep and I was stressed out all the time. And, you know, having celiac disease was probably the primary contributor for me. Mm-hmm. Because when you resolve that, you can actually have an improvement and be able to digest your food and absorb your nutrients. Now, for most people, a lot of people don't know this, but there's multiple types of osteoporosis. So you've got primary osteoporosis. That's related typically to a decrease in estrogen in postmenopausal women, right? Estrogen has a protective effect on bone. When estrogen levels decrease, as they do during menopause, that's going to cause an increase in the activity level cells that break down bone. But then there's a whole nother cause, and that's what I fell into, which was secondary osteoporosis. And that's where this occurs as a result of behaviors, conditions, disorders, diseases, and medications. And most people unexpectedly diagnosed, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, they have or had a secondary cause. But just because you're a postmenopausal woman does not mean we should just say, oh, it's just hormones, it's a natural part of aging, and move on with the medication and not address root cause issues. Because I've seen many, many times where there are still root cause issues that have to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what about what's going on? Like, is there a trend in prevalence of this in terms of the last 30, 50 years? And if there is, what are the biggest explanatory factors for that?
Yeah, I would definitely say this is not something that's going down. It's increasing. We've got more cases of osteopenia, osteoporosis, fractures. That's on the rise. Obviously, you know, hormones play a massive role. And if people are not taking the steps they need, especially before or right around menopause, including even considering bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, then you could potentially have an issue there. And then also, when it comes to the other contributing factors to bone loss and osteoporosis, if you have those things and you're not addressing them, then that's going to be something that you need to do. And I can just even walk through some of the more common things that can be contributing to bone loss and osteoporosis, which—
Yeah, please. Let's talk about some of these key root causes.
Yeah. So one of the first ones would be medications, right? So we've got, if you've got glucocorticoid medications, a lot of people take these medications. They're steroid medications designed to suppress inflammation. They mimic natural steroid hormones in the body. They're going to be used to treat conditions like asthma, like autoimmune disease, rheumatoid arthritis. Two of the more common drug names a lot of people will probably know are prednisone and cortisone. Bone loss is a common side effect of those medications. And that happens for a few reasons. First one is that those medications, they're going to reduce the GI absorption of calcium. They're going to increase urinary excretion of calcium that causes a deficit. And then we have the glucocorticoids are directly acting on osteoclasts, the bone breakdown cells, to increase their lifespan. And what happens there is that ends up reducing your bone density. Also, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, typically used as antidepressants. There was a review of 19 studies on the effect of SSRIs that indicate they have a negative effect on bone mineral density and increase the risk of fracture.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's super, super important. And then this is a big one, right? Antacids. These are drugs that reduce the production of or increase the suppression of stomach acid. So these are your proton pump inhibitors, your H2 receptor antagonist drugs. That would be omeprazole, Nexium, Prevacid, ranitidine, Zantac, Tums can even fall into this category, right? A lot of people that have or think they have too much stomach acid actually have too little stomach acid. And when they take these, they end up suppressing what little stomach acid they do have. And the reason that's a problem is because you need stomach acid to properly break down and extract nutrients from your food, like amino acids, the building blocks of protein. Your bones are 50% protein by volume. They need amino acids, calcium, magnesium, iron, B12. If you've got low stomach acid, you know, you're going to be starving of those nutrients, basically. So that's going to obviously increase, you know, issues with having enough calcium. It's going to increase your risk of osteoporosis. So those are some of the bigger ones. And then digestive issues. Those are, you know, I mentioned celiac disease. That's an autoimmune condition where the consumption of gluten damages these tiny little nutrient absorption centers in your small intestine called villi. These are responsible for absorbing the nutrients from the food you eat. But when you eat gluten and you have celiac disease, that's going to blunt those villi to the point where they can't actually do their job. And when they can't do their job, you know, they're not going to be absorbing your calcium, your vitamin D, your phosphorus. And your bones, your body still needs those nutrients on a daily basis to execute its daily functions. And if you're not taking them in and you're not absorbing them, where's it going to go? It's going to go to the bones, your greatest mineral reserves, and it's going to pull those. And that's going to be contributor to bone loss and osteoporosis. So those are some of the big ones. I mean, there are many, many contributors, but those are a couple of the really big ones.
Okay. A few more specific questions. Are you aware of any significant environmental toxicants that are linked with this?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the biggest ones that we're facing, I wouldn't even say I could go to environmental in just a sec, but I would say one of the biggest ones is that people are consuming on a daily basis in many cases is sugar. If people didn't know that sugar was an issue before, I'm going to give you one more reason as to why it's probably not a good thing for your bone health. Number one is sugar damages bone by triggering an inflammatory response. So it's going to lower your vitamin D levels. It's going to deplete your bone healthy minerals like calcium, magnesium, chromium, and copper. It's going to inhibit that intestinal absorption of calcium, and it's going to block the absorption of vitamin C. And vitamin C is key for maintaining a healthy skeleton. So, I mean, most of your audience is probably already aware that if you're eating crackers and cookies and cakes and pizzas, and pastas and crackers and all that stuff, that's not going to be the best thing to support, you know, your bone health. So that's probably one of the main things. And then also chemicals, glyphosate is a big one, right? It's a broad spectrum systemic herbicide, crop desiccant. It's sprayed on and around certain foods. That's associated with an increased risk of cancer, but it's also a chelator of minerals too, right? So you need those minerals and those nutrients. You need to be able to take those in and absorb those nutrients. So that's another big one. But then also unfiltered water, right? If you're drinking unfiltered tap water, there's a good chance you're consuming all those chemicals and pollutants that the environmental working group talks about and says are found in our water. Those volatile organic compounds, heavy metals, pharmaceuticals, endocrine disrupting chemicals, chlorine, fluoride. There's actually, you can go to ewg.org/tap water. You type in your zip code and it's going to generate a list of all these contaminants that are detected in your tap water that exceed health guidelines. So you can go find that information out now. And then what you do to remedy that is you can go invest in a filtration system or something like that, you know, reverse osmosis with remineralizer, or you could find something like a solid block carbon filter, like a Berkey or something with fluoride filters. That's going to filter out the bad stuff, but it's going to leave in the minerals. So those are some big ones that I would say too. And then we've got BPA and phthalates, you know, in plastics and water bottles, plastic food containers, synthetic fragrances, commercial cleaning products. So these are all things that a lot of us have, and we can always find healthier or better alternatives to these things. Switch to the essential oils. You know, you can clean with vinegar or Castile soap. A lot of different things you could swap out there.
Okay. As far as nutrition, I know you've mentioned some aspect of that, but is there anything you can speak to as far as the role of vitamin D and vitamin K in particular? I mean, modern diets in particular are commonly deficient in vitamin K. Mm-hmm. Most of the population is deficient in vitamin D, which is largely a result of sun deficiency, but also some aspect is nutritional as well. But what's the role of those two things in this picture?
Absolutely. Yeah. So vitamin D plays such a major role in not just bone health, our health in general, but it's one of the most important nutrients for overall health, well-being, bone health. It's not just a vitamin, right? It acts as this powerful hormone in our bodies. It induces the transcription of more than 50 genes. It's going to increase the intestinal absorption of calcium. It's promoting higher bone mineral density. It's lowering that fracture risk. It's helping us improve our muscle strength and decrease the risk for falls. And there's just so many benefits that come with vitamin D, right? Super, super important. And like you said, a lot of people aren't getting enough of it because of a lack of sun exposure, for one. And even if people do get sun exposure, maybe they're not getting that midday sunlight with UVB radiation, or maybe they're lathering up in sunscreen and they're not actually getting that exposure to their skin. They may be outside, but they're not actually getting that. Mm-hmm. So you need to make sure from dietary sources perspective, you can get vitamin D. Sun is going to be your best source of it. But you can get vitamin D from fatty fish, right? Salmon, herring, sardines, anchovies, oysters have some, egg yolks, mushrooms have D2. But in terms of supplementation, that can also be helpful. But with supplementation with vitamin D, this is not a supplement that you just start taking blindly, right? You need to check your levels beforehand. And then as you start to take vitamin D, you need to monitor that every 3 to 6 months and see where your levels at, because you can get to a point where you have too much vitamin D, right? So if you are going and getting your 25 hydroxy vitamin D lab test, and you're looking at that, the range on that, if you're in the US, 30 to 100 ng/mL, that's a massively wide range, right? If you're at 100 or higher, that's too much. And it can actually contribute to bone loss if you're above that. But then if you're on the lower side, if you're around the 30s and lower, that's also going to contribute to bone loss. So we need to bump that up, get that higher than 40, you know, 50, somewhere around there. Some people's needs may be higher than that. But right in that 40 to 80 range is going to be really, really important for most people.
Yeah.
And then vitamin K also. So a lot of people hear of vitamin K, but a lot of people don't understand there are different types of vitamin K, right? There's K1 and there's K2. K1 can be converted to K2, but not efficiently. K2 is what's most important for bone health. So vitamin K2 has a lot of different forms, but the major ones we hear about mostly are MK4 and MK7. MK4 has a really short half-life, stays in your blood like 4 to 8 hours, something like that. And it may require larger doses that are spread throughout the day, right? MK7 has a longer half-life and that stays in the blood, you know, or in the body, you know, 2 to 3 days. The reason why K2 is so important is it's going to aid in bone mineralization and formation by activating something called osteocalcin. And what this is doing is it's ensuring that calcium is deposited in our bone and not our soft tissues like the arteries and the kidneys. So super, super important. So where can you get these from your diet? Dietary sources of K1, those are your dark green veggies, asparagus, your kale, your broccoli. K2, MK4, that would be things like beef liver, grass-fed ghee, butter, dark meat chicken, pastured egg yolks. Those are all great sources of MK4. And then MK7, K2, MK7, hard cheeses, fermented foods, sauerkraut, kimchi, natto, and bacterial fermentation in our guts. Okay, so you can also supplement the, in Japan, there were some studies where showing that, you know, 45 milligrams of vitamin MK4 is actually used as a treatment for osteoporosis. But you can supplement with MK7, MK4. Those can be helpful additions to your plan too.
Excellent. You mentioned earlier that there's sort of these two aspects of assessing your skeletal health, mm-hmm. bone mineral density and bone quality.
Yeah. Bone quality.
As far as my understanding of physiology, and I'm certainly far from a bone expert, but we have osteoblasts, we have osteoclasts. Okay. So bone deposition, bone formation, and bone destruction. And what are the sort of key determinants of bone quality though? What is actually determining if we're laying down bone in a high quality versus low quality way?
I would say some of the things you have to be incorporating into your plan, like exercise is going to play a major role in that, in the quality of bone that's formed. The stress that you're putting on your bones, that healthy stress, exercise plays a massive role in that. But at the same time, you have to have the minerals, the nutrients, and all those inputs to help form that structure. It's a collagen protein matrix structure upon which those minerals are formed, but you also have to have the stimulus. So what happens with bone is you have these cells that are called osteocytes too. And the osteocytes, they're like mechanical signalers that say, hey, we've got stress that's being put on the bones, or hey, we're getting these tiny little cracks or fractures in the bone. That's natural for everybody, right? Not just people with osteopenia or osteoporosis. As you and I are going about our daily lives, exercising intensely and things like that, we're going to start to get these little tiny micro cracks and things like that. And these cells, these osteocytes say, hey, we've got these little micro cracks that need to be repaired. And then what happens is the osteoclasts come in, the bone resorption cells come in, and they scoop out those tiny little cracks. And then we have these bone forming cells that follow right in behind it and fill it in with stronger, healthier bone. It's a coupled process. And that is why it's so important to be active, because you have to have that stimulus to build stronger, healthier, better quality bones. Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like we should also add to the discussion of root causes, sedentary lifestyles being a big contributor of this issue as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. And I mean, I could even talk about too, you know, mitochondrial function is super, super important when it comes to bone health. Mitochondrial function is actually, it's essential for maintaining your osteoblasts, which are your bone building cells, your osteoclasts, which are your bone breakdown cells, and the myocytes in the muscle. And what happens is when we have mitochondrial dysfunction, that's going to impair osteogenesis. That's the formation of bone we were just talking about. And it's going to increase osteoclast activity and accelerate bone loss. Part of the reason for this is when you have compromised energy metabolism and oxidative stress, that's going to contribute to age-related stem cell dysfunction in that bone. Mm-hmm. Mitophagy is also key in keeping the cell healthy, right? It's going to promote turnover of mitochondria, and it prevents that accumulation of dysfunctional mitochondria. And that in turn is going to play a role in the proliferation, the differentiation, and the function of those bone forming and bone breakdown cells. So we really need to be focused on how we can support musculoskeletal health. So there's plenty of research that suggests some of those things we were just talking about. Anti-inflammatory diet with plenty of protein, super important. Exercise, proper supplementation, vitamin D is important, omega-3 fatty acids, even probiotics, you know, can have a positive effect on muscle strength, bone density, and bone quality too.
Excellent. Okay. There is a myth that's been around for, well, I shouldn't say a myth. There is an idea that's been around for probably at least 3 or 4 decades, that consumption of protein and animal protein in particular acidifies the body, and that this leaches calcium from the bones. Are you aware of research that has tested that, and what does that research say?
Yeah, so great question, because I've heard this many times too. And protein is essential for bone health. You cannot, like, when bone is being torn down or broken down, it's not like that bone is being, you know, we're going in and we're selectively plucking out calcium from that bone. We're actually tearing down that whole structure, which includes the protein. So protein is so important. You cannot rebuild or much less maintain if you do not have adequate protein. So the absolute minimum amount that you would want to be including in your plan, and I mean like bare minimum, 0.545 grams of protein per pound of body weight. So if you weigh 100 pounds, right, 55 grams is, I mean, the absolute minimum. But what's unfortunate is, and especially, I see this a lot, especially with people that are following, and there's nothing, this is not like a dig or anything on that dietary approach on vegan and vegetarian, but I see a lot of times people are falling short, like really short there. They're not getting those nutrients and those amino acids that they need. So we need to be really, really intentional about how we get there.
And in many cases, they become actually fearful of consuming too much protein. Like for some of the ideas, you know, there's ideas that consuming protein or animal protein might boost mTOR and IGF-1 and increase your risk of cancer, or is acidifying your body and causing your bones to leach calcium. These ideas have been circulating for many years. And so some people are actually falling short on protein consumption due to fear of consuming protein.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, so let's even just talk about, there was a researcher at Tufts Nutrition Research Center on Aging in Boston, noticed that they did a study and they noticed that a high calcium intake did in fact lead to increased bone gain if the patient's intake of protein was high, right? This was Beth Dawson Hughes. She had previously published the results of a calcium and vitamin D supplementation trial that produced a better than 50% reduction in fracture risk in healthy Bostonians. But there were some, like what she realized is that the people that had the highest protein intakes, so about 1.5 times the RDA, bone gain was dramatic in that group of people, right? So that's 0.8 grams per kilogram of body weight. And in the other group, it was zero in the more than usual and usually adequate protein intake. So those lesser amount groups. So you have to have enough protein, but you also have to have the other nutrients that are going to be there too, because just enough protein is not going to be the only thing you need there.
Right. With that in mind, let's talk about calcium consumption and dairy specifically. This is another controversial area where, since you and I were little kids, we saw commercials on TV, saying, how consumption of dairy is so important for bone health. And yet if you are in some of the vegan and vegetarian communities, you might encounter people who are saying consumption of dairy was actually linked with decreased bone density and things like that. And there are some studies that have shown things like that. So I'm curious what your interpretation of the body of evidence on that topic is as far as dairy consumption and bone health.
Yeah, I'm not a proponent of drink a bunch of milk. I'll start with that. I'm not a proponent of drink a bunch of milk, but I will start with dairy is a rich source of calcium, right? That's a fact. And a little over 30% of the calcium in dairy is absorbed. And if dairy is part of somebody's plan and dietary approach, cultured and fermented dairy is the kind of dairy you want to be incorporating. So that's your kefirs and your yogurts. And things like that, because you're not just getting those bioavailable nutrients, and it's more than just calcium at that point, but you're also getting beneficial bacteria, beneficial yeast too. Whey protein, if somebody can tolerate it, right? If you can tolerate that as part of your plan, that could be a helpful addition. But if you're somebody that has an autoimmune disease, or you're trying to improve some other health condition, you may test that and realize it's not going to be the right thing for you in that moment. But let's even just shift away from dairy for a second and talk about where else can we get calcium from that could actually be helpful for us. So we already know a little over 30% of calcium in dairy is absorbed. Edible bones are probably very similar to that, right? So that's your salmon, your sardines, your mackerel. You can go get canned fish. And when I say canned, most people are like, nobody wants to eat out of a can. Well, I can tell you those bones that are in there, they're going to be really soft, almost melt in your mouth. I know that doesn't sound appetizing, fish bones melt in your mouth, but they're not going to poke you. But what's great about salmon, wild sockeye salmon bones, sardine, mackerel, is those bones don't just contain calcium. They contain all the other nutrients and factors and things like that, that your bones need in the right proportions. How perfect is that? It's nature's perfect food. And then we've got the addition of protein that's coming from the fish. And then we have omega-3s, the dampeners of inflammation. So that's an awesome one right there. Then we have 40 to 60% of the calcium in most cruciferous vegetables is absorbed, which is great. So that's your broccoli, your kale, your bok choy, arugula. Gosh, arugula is one of my absolute favorite leafy greens. And it is a great source of bioavailable calcium. If you're looking at, and I don't like plastic clamshells that are in the stores, but if you're looking at one of those and you saute that down into kind of a small portion, that's got about 200 milligrams of bioavailable calcium in it. And it's one of probably the last remaining bitter foods in most of our diets, which is going to be great for your liver health, for bile production, and for your digestive system too. So I absolutely love arugula. So if you can incorporate that one, go for it.
It's also one of the richest foods in nitrates, which allows for nitric oxide, which is critical for circulation and microcirculation. I've been kind of doing a deep dive on that lately. And microcirculation, I think, is critical for so many issues. And I am certain that it's critical for bone health as well. Interestingly, I will say that one of my go-to meals that I prepare for myself when my wife is not making much more elaborate and delicious meals for me, is I take a big handful of arugula, pre-washed arugula. I take a big handful, throw it on a plate, put some sardines on it and put some, high quality dressing on it. And maybe, throw some leftover potatoes or something like that on there.
Yeah.
Or sweet potatoes. But sardines and arugula are like, for me is a meal I have probably every other day.
Oh, that's a staple. Same here. Staple for me. Sometimes I'll use that Primal Kitchen dressing. Yep. That could be a great one. I mean, it's easy.
Hey,
too.
Stop copying me.
It's an easy one. Like if what I've realized is like, you don't have to be perfect at this, right? As long as it's sustainable and you can make it work for you, like you and I are sitting here just talking about how, like we both eat the same food almost every other day. And we have never talked about this before.
Yeah.
And it's easy, but it's good. Like it's nourishing. So it's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those are, again, going back to this, I'm not a drink a bunch of milk fan. There are great sources of calcium out there. If you're going to incorporate dairy, cultured, fermented, and it doesn't have to be cow's milk, sheep, goat, camel, like there are other great sources that have less inflammatory proteins and even better nutritional profiles in some cases too.
Yeah. There's a company here. I'm in San Diego. There's a company here that started selling some raw milk products at the local health food store. And they have a raw goat milk kefir that I'm in love with.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, many years ago, I used to go to like goat farmers in the area and just buy goat milk from them because it wasn't even legal to sell raw goat milk. But yeah, Now, fortunately, laws have changed. And so you can get raw goat milk products and raw goat milk kefir, and it's awesome and it's delicious.
I actually got, I got camel milk for our kids recently just to try it out and see it. And they didn't really know the difference. So that was good.
Yeah. I would like to get camel milk too. The only company I've seen selling it, it's ridiculously expensive for
it was pretty pricey. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Better be doing a lot of good stuff in my body for those prices.
I know, right?
So, what else did I want to ask you? There was one more question I had on something related to that. Okay. Maybe I'll come back to it. So let's talk about what a bone healthy plan looks like, as far as what do we need to be doing on a daily basis or a weekly basis in order to maintain optimal bone health. Kind of take us through the list and some of your top strategies, and maybe throw in a little hack or two somewhere in there.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So if we were to zoom out and look at a stronger bones plan, what does that look like? And this is the stuff I walk through in depth and at length, but I'll synthesize it down here. So the first step, you have to identify and address root cause issues of bone loss. If there are things that are damaging your bones or contributing to bone loss, you have to know what those things are. And actually, when you go get that bone density scan, remember, if you haven't gotten it, go get it. And then once you get it, that bone density scan is not telling you right now if you are still actively losing bone. So how do you find that out? Well, you go get a test called a serum CTX or a CT low peptide test. It's a blood test. And that test looks at the activity level of cells that are breaking down bone. And if that activity level is really high, that can be an indicator of active bone loss and a root cause issue that needs to be addressed. There's also the NT low peptide and urine NTX test. You get the second urine of the day for that. So those are two of the bone resorption tests that you would look at, but you also want to look at formation too. And there's a test called the P1NP, procollagen type 1 N-terminal propeptides, most sensitive marker for bone formation. And you always want to balance the two of those things and get them, you know, at the same time. So that gives you a great picture, at least initially, of what's going on inside your bones at this point in time. Okay, so start there. Then you have to make sure you're getting the right nutrients to support, you know, stronger, healthier bones, through diet, through digestion, through absorption. You have to make sure that you're taking in the right nutrients in the right amounts, that you're actually absorbing those nutrients, and that those nutrients are making it to the cell level. All three of those things have to line up. And unfortunately, what I see even is even when people are eating healthy and they're eating, you know, and they're eating and they're doing the supplementation stuff, they might not be hitting layer one. So it's hard for the rest of those things to align downstream. So if you notice things in your own digestive health that are off, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, candida, low stomach acid, or maybe you feel like you've got too much stomach acid, and some of those other indicators, then you need to do a little bit more evaluation there to get to the root cause of what's going on and address those things. And then we need to focus on building. You need to build strength of body, strength of mind, strength of bone, and you need to do that in a way that prevents fracture and injury. So building strength of body, exercise. Exercise plays a massive role in your bone health. You need two different types of stimuli for your bones. You need muscle pulling on bone, and you need impact. The most effective interventions are going to use one or both in combination, okay? And what happens is you've got this mechanical signal that's sending a chemical signal that's telling those bones to become stronger. So a lot of times most people are told, hey, go do some weight bearing exercise. Great, thanks. Walking, I can tell you, is not going to be enough, right? It's great for your daily health. I would say still incorporate that into your plan, but do not count that as your only form of exercise, especially if your goal is to improve your bone strength. It could help you maintain your bone strength, but it's not going to help you build really, especially if there's still something underlying. So do incorporate weight-bearing exercise. By weight-bearing, I mean anything that your muscles and your bones are working against gravity to keep you upright, right? Anything that's on your feet, that's placing that stress on the bones, that's going to be a good thing. So running, jogging, hiking, gardening, playing tennis, soccer with the kids or grandkids, you know, whatever that is, those are all weight-bearing. And then also keep in mind, what are the non-weight-bearing things that you're doing? And are those making up the majority of the activities that you're doing? Cycling, kayaking, swimming. Are those the only things that you're doing for exercise? Because those are non-weight-bearing exercises. And that's not going to place the stress on the bones that we need. And it's not to say that just because those things are not placing the stress on the bones doesn't mean we shouldn't ever do those, right? If you enjoy riding your bike and it makes you happy and it reduces your stress, ride your bike, right? If you enjoy kayaking, I freaking love it, you know, go do it. Swimming, all that stuff, great, but don't count it as the only thing. You have to incorporate the next thing I'm going to talk about, which is muscle and strengthening exercise, right? And you have to do it at an intensity. The studies that show the greatest effects are in that 5 to 10 rep range. That you have to do it at an intensity that's actually going to have the desired effect that you want. So this would be, you could use heavy resistance bands. You could use free weights. You could use, barbells and things, if you know how to use those things. And the major compound movements, the squats, the deadlifts, the overhead presses, those kinds of movements, those are movements that are really going to be helpful. Now, just from this conversation, if you don't already know how to go do those exercises, please do not go to YouTube, watch one video and go start cranking out 5 to 10 reps of deadlifts. Please don't do that, right? Probably not gonna be the best thing for you, but get something to look at your body mechanics, evaluate your movement patterns. Then once you do that, you'll be off to the races there. So and then the other thing is sleep. You need to sleep well. That's the time for your muscles and your bones and all these things to repair. And it is pretty well documented. If you have poor sleep, it will reduce your bone quality. So that's one of the biggest things that you can do is start getting some better sleep.
Beautiful. Last question. I actually remember the one that I want to, two more questions. I remember the one I wanted to ask you before. Are you aware of any research around stem cell activity and bone health? You know, is there a link between doing things which are stimulating the release, the proliferation of stem cells and maintaining bone health?
I actually just did an interview on this recently with someone where we talked about stem cells and bone health. And cool. While there aren't any human studies yet, there were some promising animal studies that show there may be some benefit there. I think more research is going to have to come out on that. And obviously, just from this conversation, I can't make a statement that, you know, that's going to be an effective intervention for that. But at least from a clinical perspective too, I think, you know, there, it could be helpful, but I, you know, we don't know yet.
Got it.
That's probably the safest way to answer that question.
Okay. And the last question I have for you is, are you aware of any sort of more advanced technologies, things like red light therapy, things like pulsed electromagnetic fields, or anything along those lines that has been shown to be effective in helping bone mineral density?
Yeah, PEMF, you know, Dr. Pollock, he's one of the leading people in that whole vibration plates. A lot of times people come to me and they ask me about these different modalities, vibration plates, like the power plate or a Meridine or something like that, or the PEMF mat. And those things can be helpful and they can be a complement, but a lot of times people start with those things and they come to me and they say, hey, I got this single supplement, or, hey, I got this vibration plate. And I'm like, great. Do you know if we have we addressed your root causes? Right. But we're still having, you know, diarrhea every day, you know, or like we're not sleeping at all at night. I can tell you that the investment you would make in those things is not going to do what it's intending to do until you get the other pieces in place.
Beautiful. This has been awesome, Kevin. I've really appreciated this. I think you've given a lot of value here, and thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with my audience. Where can people follow your work or get in touch with you to work with you one-on-one? I don't know if you offer that as a service, but let us know where people can reach you.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you can always find me over at bonecoach.com, and we're on all the major social channels, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, all that stuff at Bone Coach. But then what I'm going to do for you and your audience, Ari, is I'll give your audience access to my free Stronger Bones Masterclass. Maybe we can link this in the show notes or something.
Yeah, like absolutely. That. We'll put a link. We'll put it at theenergyblueprint.com/bonecoach.
Awesome. And what that's going to have in it is it's going to walk through and more depth that three-step process that I talk about to start building stronger bones, addressing your bone loss, getting on the path to improvement. And then beyond that, we've got coaching programs. We have a highly credentialed team of experts. We've got about 14 people on our team that work with people specifically if they've got issues with osteopenia and osteoporosis and need to improve. We can help you get there. So we've helped a lot of people at this point. And so that's about it.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Kevin. And thank you for the gift to my audience. I appreciate that. Very kind of you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Awesome. I look forward to the next conversation.
Sounds good, Ari.
Hey there, this is Ari again. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, if you found it valuable, please share it with your friends, share it with your family. Help me get the word out there. Also, if you're on YouTube, make sure to hit the subscribe button and hit that little bell to get notifications every time we release a new video or new episode of the podcast. And if you're listening to this, make sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or on your favorite podcast. Thanks so much for supporting my work at the Energy Blueprint. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I will see you in the next one.